Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Rossafari's weekly Zoo News episode. This is our look at all things newsworthy in the world of zoos and aquariums, conservation, and animal stuff. I'm really excited to have y'all here, and it's the start of Zoo News for Season 3, so welcome to Season 3 Zoo News! Woo! Yay! Anyway, speaking of new things, if you are listening to this on Friday, July 29th, when it drops, I am going to be at Mount Gretna, the theater at Mount Gretna, tonight and tomorrow, performing a brand new show called Less Honkin', More Tonkin'. Yeah, that's the name of the show. This is a country kind of tribute-y show that is written by my buddy Jason, who I do Great Balls of Fire with, and he wrote that show as well. And it's probably going to be a lot of fun. I don't know because I haven't really gotten to it yet. I'm recording this on Wednesday night, and we'll be doing the show tomorrow. Our tech and running through everything. So the people who are involved more heavily have been rehearsing a little bit, but I have not. I'm just going to show up and play the drums because that's what I do, and I'm pretty excited about it. But what I'm more excited about is also musical. So Miles is turning 8 on August 10th. And it's weird. It seems like that's his birthday every year. It's so strange. But even on a leap year. Yeah, so weird. I know, right? But anyway, so Miles has really expressed an interest in learning guitar recently, y'all. And, you know, he has a djembe that Zoe brought him from Africa. And that's a little hand drum, for those of you that don't know that. I mean, they make quite large ones as well, but his is little. And, my mom's gotten him a harmonica and stuff. He got a keyboard, but never got any lessons and never really learned it. But this is the first time that he has really expressed a real interest in a musical instrument. So, professional musician dad here is all in on making this an awesome experience. So when I was visiting with him today, I took him to Guitar Center and we sat with a bunch of acoustic guitars and then electric guitars. And since he's just turning 8, he needs to have a 3/4 size guitar. And we found a gorgeous Martin acoustic guitar that was that size that was just beautiful and wildly expensive for a kid's guitar. But, you know, of course, my son has good taste in instruments. It's genetic, I'm sure. And so he sat and he strummed it. And, we went out and we had him play a little 3/4 size Stratocaster as well, the Fender electric guitar. And I don't know, he really loved the acoustic guitar. And he looked at me and he said, "Yeah, Dad, I don't know. The acoustic just speaks to me. It feels like home." And I have to tell y'all that melted my heart. I have, very deep relationships with some musical instruments. There are some drum sets that I am madly in love with. There are some drum sets that I have to play on that I tolerate. It's a thing, and it's hard to say why. Sometimes some of the kits that I like are cheaper than the ones I don't like and stuff, and technically not made of as good of materials or whatever. But I have to tell y'all, in my experience, sometimes an instrument just speaks to you, and that is a beautiful thing. Like, musicians have a bond with their instruments. Oftentimes we name them. It's a thing. And so I'm really excited that Miles is really excited about playing guitar. And I made him sit there and strum it and hold the strings down until his fingers got the little notches in them that when you first start playing, and like showed him that it will hurt and you have to kind of get through that pain and build some calluses, and told him, you know, there's this expression that musicians have where I played until my fingers bled, because you do, they do. And we talked about it, and he's still just like, I don't care. I feel like I'm supposed to do this. Let's do it. So I'm getting him a guitar for his birthday, and my parents are going to get him a year of lessons. I made Miles commit to at least 1 year of weekly lessons, because if you're going to do it, you got to do it right. And yeah, so that is my big exciting news for this week. Miles is getting a guitar, and of course, I'm looking for either that one at Guitar Center or one like it that is a really good guitar, even for starting off. The better the instrument, the easier it is to learn how to play on. So that is my exciting news, and I guess that's really all I have to say about that. And no, for those of you wondering, I'm not disappointed that it's not drums. I'm just excited that he's excited about an instrument. Okay, cool. So yeah, Zoo News. You can tag me at Ross Safari on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, or at Ross Safari Pod on TikTok. If you see any Zoo News worthy articles out there, or videos, or whatever. And you can also email me, rossafaripod@gmail.com. And if you do that, I'll say your name at the end of the episode when I'm saying thanks. So cool. Do that, and hit subscribe and follow all the things and do all the things. And let's do Zoo News.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Ow, there's a funky monkey. Tree kangaroo. Or a binturong.
It's Zoo News.
Yeah. So we're going to start off by talking about a new project that is being supported by 4 AZA-accredited organizations: the Jacksonville Zoo and Gardens, the Maryland Zoo, the Milwaukee County Zoo, and the Memphis Zoo are all coming together to support a new program to try to help with elephant conservation in the wild. The project is being run by the nonprofit Elephants for Africa, and it involves a veterinarian heading out through Botswana's national parks in search of elephant bulls. So transient elephant males account for 99% of the population in the parks that they're going to. And no one really knows what the animals do as they travel through the parks, which makes them vulnerable to poaching. There's also just a ton of human-elephant conflict in the area. And in recent years, elephants have even extended the southern edge of their range into the capital of Botswana, Gaborone, which is making things even worse in that area. So the goal is to dart 10 male elephants and then outfit them with satellite trackers. So hopefully EFA can understand the likely movement patterns of African savanna elephants in Botswana and help deal with protecting them from poachers and protecting them and humans from human-elephant conflict. Just an awesome example of 4 zoos stepping up to fund some amazing in situ conservation work that is desperately needed right now. The Columbus Zoo and Aquarium recently announced their impact report for the year 2021. And this is a 22-page document that talks about all kinds of stuff. Many things in it have already appeared on Zoo News. But there were some really interesting numbers that I found absolutely fascinating in here. So there are 1,032 animals that needed medical events, as they are termed, and there were 6,601 medical events performed on those animals in that year. That is 18 medical events per day, including 146 ultrasounds, 175 CT studies, and 282 radiograph studies. There were 3,609 samples collected for diagnostic purposes from various animals. 1,811 fecal samples were collected, and 1,510 blood samples were collected. And in total, the veterinary team there did 27,626 total tests on animals at the Columbus Zoo. That is absolutely incredible. And to be clear, that is just at the Columbus Zoo and does not include the wilds, which have their own numbers. Under the heading Conservation and Sustainability, the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium states that they supported 77 conservation projects, 7 emergency projects, and that these projects were involved in over 24 countries. They have released 2 imperiled species back into the wild, 120 hellbenders, and 134 American burying beetles. And they also recycled all kinds of cool stuff. I'm not going to go into all of the numbers because at some point it just gets crazy. And participated in 53 research projects that will help animals both in captivity and in the wild live better, fuller lives. Amazing work is being done at this zoo and zoos all around the country. Oh, and speaking of the Columbus Zoo, they've entered into a partnership with Ohio State University, which is pretty awesome. Basically, the Ohio State Department of Athletics are giving field turf that is already used to the zoo. And the zoo is using it for enrichment and for indoor habitats and for animals that can benefit from it. Of course, you know, not all can, but many can. And there are certain animals that really seem to love it, including flamingos, goats, and even the Komodo dragon at the zoo. Pretty cool. So you remember how last season, but just a few weeks ago, I had an episode called the Shelter in Place Edition. And part of that was because people at Brookfield Zoo had to shelter in place because of somebody threatening harm to themselves and others. Well, recently people had to shelter in place at the Jacksonville Zoo. Now, no one actually threatened the zoo. However, there was a shooting that took place right outside the zoo in which even a police dog actually got shot, although it was expected to recover. And because of that, people were not allowed to leave the zoo because there was an active shooter scene happening outside of it. So, you know, I try not to be too political on this podcast outside of the politics of conservation and what can be done through legislation to help animals. And we'll actually talk about that more in conservation news. But yeah, this gun thing's a little out of control in the country. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And I'm not actually completely anti-gun, if I'm being honest with you. Happy to share more personally if anybody is curious. This isn't the place for a diatribe. But kind of feels like something needs to be done. I can't believe that we've had 2 different zoos have shelters in place. Shelter in place is? Yeah, shelters in place orders. Shelter in place orders. There we go. In the last couple weeks. And yeah, I'm leaving that in to try and be a little funny. It's a heavy topic, but it's also a fun podcast. We're trying here, folks. A new rhino has been born at Cleveland Metro Parks Zoo, and now you can help name her. The female Eastern Black Rhino calf was born on July 9th, and the calf is doing well. And with only around 750 remaining Eastern Black Rhinos in the wild, it's a pretty important birth. But yeah, now you can help name the calf. You can vote with a donation either directly at the zoo at the Daniel Maltz Rhino Reserve, or by going to futureforwildlife.org/rhino naming. You can choose from Ali, meaning supreme, Anika, meaning sweet, and Dahlia, meaning gentle. All of the funds raised go to the African Wildlife Foundation, which protects rhinos by recruiting, training, and equipping wildlife scouts and anti-poaching patrols, and supporting training for law enforcement officers to stop wildlife crime. Wait a minute. What's that sound? Oh no, this must mean... G'day mates, it's time for news from Australia, so grab a Foster's and crack it open, cause here we go. Throw another prawn on the barbie and let's get to it.
No!
Oh, come on, Ren, I'm just having fun.
No!
Okay, jeez, I'll stop with the accent. Goodness. But you do at least admit that Vegemite sucks, Foster's is awesome, and the Outback Steakhouse is 100% authentic, right?
No!
All right, so I recently discovered just a bunch of stories from Australia and one from New Zealand that I thought were worth mentioning, so here are those stories. First of all, there is some real controversy happening down under right now, y'all. Almost $3 million of taxpayer money that was given to a theme park in Queensland to develop a state-of-the-art facility to protect koalas has been diverted to build, you guessed it, a new roller coaster. The park is known as Dream World, and the koala facility was going to be known as the Future Lab. And so during budget estimate hearings this week, the Queensland government's tourism minister were forced to admit that they did not know what happened to the cash. So they went on a quick search and found out that the wildlife project had been delayed and the funding was used to build the Steel Taipan roller coaster. Upon further research, they found out that some people in the government did actually approve of this. This was not Dream World ripping off the government, because since Dream World was closed for a long time due to the COVID pandemic, they decided to focus on things that would get bodies back into the park first. And so they moved the money to build a roller coaster. Keep in mind, Australia has, in the last couple of years, dealt with fires, a chlamydia outbreak amongst its koala population, and not one, but two major periods of flooding, all of which have just decimated the koala population. But, you know, flip side of that, there's a new roller coaster. Sigh. This next story is a bit of a cautionary tale and also kind of talks about how, you know, things can go really wrong, even with two good zoos and create a lot of financial issues. So the Australia Zoo was going to move their last elephant, who was named Burma, to Auckland Zoo after Burma's paddock mate had moved away as well to the Taronga Western Plains Zoo. Burma became the only elephant at Australia Zoo, and since they are generally considered a social species, it was thought that the best thing to do would be to move Burma to a different place. So the Auckland Zoo was all about it and has a family herd that they were expecting Burma to be accepted into. However, long story short, there were all kinds of issues with government permitting and getting the permits in time and enough information being given to everyone and all this stuff that happened. So meanwhile, the Auckland Zoo, expecting a new elephant, did more than $400,000 worth of habitat modifications to get ready for Burma. The Australia Zoo, meanwhile, booked a flight for the elephant. The flight cost $260,000. But after all kinds of issues, many which seemed to happen behind doors, led to the permit to move this specific elephant from the Australia Zoo to the Auckland Zoo. It's not like they're shutting down ever moving elephants or anything. The deal was off, and now Burma is still living alone at the Australia Zoo, which they are working on getting her to somewhere else. And they were out all that money. The Australia Zoo actually was able to refund the $400,000 to Auckland Zoo that they spent on renovations for Burma. And the cost of the flight, half of it was refunded and half is being kept as credit for when Burma does find a new home. But yeah, that's two zoos that at least temporarily are out $660,000 because of some confusion over government permitting. It really gives some interesting perspective on what it's like to move, especially some of these large animals, you know, for SSP or even in this case, just for a welfare reason. A current outbreak of foot and mouth disease in Victoria has led zoos in Victoria to stop offering close-up encounters with certain animals to protect them from catching the disease. All giraffe, kangaroo, and elephant animal encounters will not be available at the moment. A entire area of Melbourne Zoo has also been blocked off to the public because Asian elephants walk between paddocks, you know, when the crowds aren't there, using some of the same paths that humans use when they are there. So that could be a problem. So that whole area is closed for right now. And also, if you are a person who lives with any livestock except for horses, you are asked not to visit the zoo at the moment, as well as if you've been to Indonesia recently. I'm always so fascinated to see how zoos handle these diseases that travel and happen and have outbreaks, and it's always interesting to see. The team at Wildlife Sydney Zoo, a friend of this podcast, has announced that their beloved saltwater crocodile, Rocky, has passed away. Unfortunately, Rocky was found unresponsive by the team as they did their normal checks on Saturday of last week. And while they tried to save him, it was too late. He had passed away. And they still are not sure of what the cause of death is, although a full investigation is underway. Rocky was truly beloved, and something that I really love about this is Wildlife Sydney Zoo is already closed 2 days a week, but they closed an additional 2 days that week to help their staff mourn and recover. Obviously, they still had to work and take care of the animals, but they gave them 2 days to try to make everybody come to terms with this. And, you know, while I know that's not something that can happen for all animals that die in zoos, I think it's a really beautiful gesture. Condolences to everyone at the zoo for their loss, but also, you know, gold star for the mental health stuff. I really appreciate seeing that. There is a new law being proposed in Australia that would give koalas the highest level of protection of any animal species in Australian history in order to save this iconic species. It involves the building of so many new roller coasters. Yeah, no, I'm kidding. The proposed Koala Protection Act puts caveats on land clearing and development across all the habitat areas of koalas. This includes up to 1.5 million square kilometers of forest, which is 20% of the Australian continent. That is incredible. Now, you may remember from earlier episodes that it was just earlier this year that koalas were officially declared endangered in Queensland. And this will help with that situation greatly, hopefully. Hopefully this incredible bill passes. And then last but not least in our Pacifica section, we're going to throw it to New Zealand, which I know is not Australia. I have watched all of Flight of the Conchords, and I understand that there is a difference. But the rest of the world doesn't think so, friends. And I wanted to just give some props to Wellington Zoo, which has become the first zoo in the world to be accredited with the Rainbow Tick Certification. This accreditation solidifies Wellington Zoo's position as a safe and welcoming environment for members and allies of New Zealand's rainbow community. So this is an LGBTQIA plus initiative, and it's really cool. Part of the plan even includes approving the provision of 2 weeks paid leave for anyone transitioning. This is really impressive and awesome work, Wellington Zoo. Yay!
Stereotypical animal podcast theme song. Here to bring you to conservation news.
We start off with some great news out of Argentina this week, where conservationists are celebrating the birth of two Argentine jaguars born in the country's wetlands. This is the first wild birth of jaguars in this area in more than 70 years. The mother was actually just put back into the wetlands through a repopulation project last year, and the father is a Brazilian jaguar that was donated to the repopulation project back in 2019. There are in total around 250 jaguars in the wild in Argentina, so this is a really exciting birth. I'm just excited. Jaguars are awesome. And in talking about repopulation, we also have to mention that cheetahs are set to be reintroduced to India for the first time since they went extinct there 70 years ago. This is really cool. So this is going to be some African cheetahs that will be transported from Namibia to the Kuno Wildlife Sanctuary, which is a national park in the central state of Madhya Pradesh, after a deal was signed between the African nation and India. This is really exciting. The hope is that not only will this help grow a cheetah population in India, which has been missing, like I said, for 70 years, but also the area of India that they are being reintroduced to has had a loss of biodiversity at an accelerated rate, even compared to the accelerated rate of loss of biodiversity that a lot of our planet is facing. And it is believed that reintroducing cheetahs will help to stem this issue. That's because cheetahs are one of the top predators in the area, and as such, they will restore some balance to the natural order through being at the top of the food chain. The overall goal of the project is to reintroduce 50 cheetahs throughout various parks in India over the next 5 years. There is some concern that it will be a challenge because African cheetahs are not the same subspecies that actually lived in India, which was the Asiatic cheetah. They are habitat specialists and generally require large grasslands, which India does not always have. So there are some conservationists that are concerned about whether or not this will work, but they're going to give it a shot. And that's why they're doing a slow introduction over, like I said, the next 5 years. So I'll be very curious to see how the cheetahs take to India and if this helps with both restoring a cheetah population to India and also restoring biodiversity. In sadder news, the IUCN has officially announced the extinction of Chinese paddlefish and wild Yangtze sturgeon in the wild. They also moved 17 species to the critically endangered category, 3 to the endangered category, and 5 to the vulnerable category, showing that just in general, we are still wreaking havoc on this planet and all of the animals that live here. Well, not all of them. Deer are doing fine in general, but like most of them. And one of the species that has now been officially made an endangered species is shocking to a lot of people who find out about it. The migratory monarch butterfly, which if you live in North or South America, you have probably heard a lot about because it is known for its annual 2,500-mile journey that they take while migrating every year, has officially been named an endangered species. Over the past decade alone, the population of the migratory monarch butterfly has shrunk by as much as 72%. And you guessed it, the number one cause for that shrink is humans. Logging and deforestation have destroyed substantial areas of the butterfly's winter home in Mexico and California. And because of that, there just aren't as many migrating anymore. It's a really big issue. These butterflies are dying off at an insane rate. And of course, they're also dealing with pesticides, which can kill them, and just, you know, standard climate change stuff that we're doing and talk about all the time. So yeah, monarch butterflies, which not that long ago were very easy to see, are now an endangered species. Crazy to think of it. And while we're on the subject of extinctions and becoming more endangered, two studies recently came out that together point to the idea that the most distinctive birds are the birds that are at the highest risk of extinction. This is for a couple of different reasons. The first of which is that a lot of the most unique birds are highly specialized. Animals like the toucan, for instance, are highly specialized and serve a very specific, very important, but not super well represented ecological niche. And a lot of those ecological niches are disappearing as populations get more damaged by human and other issues. The second reason is that as the world continues to heat up, more and more bird species are likely to move to cooler regions in the face of this climate change, and as such, genetically will homogenize, because that is how evolution works. So, as it becomes, you know, less good for a bird to be a tropical species because they're going to cooler regions, they're going to start to lose some of those distinctive flavors that make these distinctive birds so incredible. So when you put these two studies together, it looks like the most distinctive birds are the ones we're going to lose next. And that's really sad. But okay, there is some happier news in the world of conservation this week. Tiger numbers are up 40% from just back in 2015. That is absolutely incredible. This is thanks to improved monitoring techniques and conservation programs. So it is believed that there are between 3,726 and 5,578 tigers in the wild. And even though the population is still considered endangered, their population is stable and increasing. That is hugely great news for tigers. And I'm excited that I'm sharing it on an episode that drops on International Tiger Day. Yay! And last but not least this week in conservation news, last week tonight, the show featuring John Oliver has yet again made the podcast by doing a really cool thing for conservation. I'm not entirely sure that John Oliver isn't like just a fan who really wants to hear himself on the podcast. Anyway, the team at Last Week Tonight has purchased every single doll, plastic doll that is, that they could find that had washed up on beaches and are weirdly being sold online because that's what the internet does? I don't know. It's really weird. But they are getting rid of all of these dolls and making sure that they can't go back into the ocean by buying them all and then figuring out how to destroy them. And on top of that, they are making a $10,000 donation to the Turtle and Marine Wildlife Rehabilitation Program, because obviously plastics in waters hurt turtles and marine wildlife. So yay, John Oliver and the whole team at Last Week Tonight. And thanks for being a fan, friend. I wish.
It's time for other news. It's time for other news. Hey, now, right now, right now, it's time. It's time for other news. Hey, it's a segue to the Paul got other news.
Okay, so this first story is really awesome. There was recently a tiger that had three cubs at a zoo in India. And one of the tiger cubs is tricolor, white, yellow, and black, which the zoo in question claims is the only tiger in the world with that coloration. Another one of the siblings actually is completely black above and white below, while the third is mostly black and partly yellow, which is a couple of weird combinations. So not quite sure what's going on there, but there is a tricolor tiger in the world, and that's pretty exciting. And last but certainly not least this week, a walrus in Norway is causing some trouble. A walrus that is named Freya has, honestly, thanks to the internet, created a bunch of fans for herself and also created a bunch of enemies because she is hanging out in harbors in Norway and hauling herself up to lounge on the boats, all 1,500 pounds of her. This is especially problematic for people who own boats that cannot handle a 1,500-pound walrus jumping on top. So yeah, it seems that a lot of the actual boat owners are not fans of Freya. However, thanks to this story spreading online, people are flocking to the harbors in Norway to try to see Freya in action. Unfortunately, Both the people that tried to get rid of her and all of her ardent fans showing up and being loud has been incredibly stressful and overwhelming for her. It's really a bummer. She doesn't get any peace. And even the TV news crews keep getting too close to Freya, trying to get pictures and video, and in the process often trapping her so that she can't get away. And also there have been harbor officials that trail her and spray her with a hose to try to keep her off of boats. And in general, walruses try to relax around 20 hours a day. So this is actually not a particularly healthy thing for Freya. As of now, the government is doing everything that it can to get people to stay out of Freya's way, and they have mentioned that relocation is a possibility if the situation worsens significantly, but they don't want to do that, and they have definitely ruled out euthanasia. So that's really good news, and I'm pretty pleased about that. This happens from time to time. Freya is not the first walrus that has ended up in Norway, and it seems like most of the time they stay for about a year or a year and a half and then head back to the Arctic. So most likely, given some more time, Freya will say goodbye and head back home.
Animal, animal, animal holidays. Animal, animal, animal holidays.
All right, and that brings us to our animal holidays for the week, and we're getting into a new month, so there is much to discuss. First of all, we are ending out July, which is Parks and Recreation Month, Plastic-Free July, National Bison Month, and Wild About Wildlife Month. And then, as I said, on Friday the 29th, when this episode drops, it is International Tiger Day. And then July 31st is both World Ranger Day and National Mutt Day. Then we turn the calendar to August, which is National Parks Month, National Catfish Month. August is for Antelope Month and Asian Elephant Awareness Month. And they're pretty hard to not be aware of if you see them, because they're large and make cool trumpety calls. Anyway, and then for your individual days in August, on the 1st, you have Manga Bay Awareness Day, and the 2nd is Golden Lion Tamarin Day. And those are your animal holidays for the week. Awesome sauce. That's another episode done. Yay, we officially have a season 3 Zoo News. Woo, very exciting stuff. Anyway, I'd like to say a huge thank you to Laura Schenk, my Red Panda level patron, and also thank everybody who contributed stories this week. Anya Keen, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley, Emily Rockbuck, Dr. Becca Feuer, Ren Howell, Dr. Zoe Vesley Gross, and Danny Poirier Larson. Thank you all for your contributions. And remember, friends, the words Newsy credits backwards is Steiderk Yeswen. The Ross Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Vesley Gross. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossafari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Rossafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.